God's name, do you need to solve it for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
Good morning, Mark Latham. How are you on this Sunday morning?
Yeah, going okay, Brent. Always good to talk to you.
Likewise. Mate, let's start with the biggest story of the week, and this week it was Peter Dutton that stood up there and told us exactly what was going to happen in reference to these seven small module nuclear and a combination of big, small, all sorts of things. So much has been said, so much has been written. I know even today they're talking about no costings, none of this, none of that, and there's a story today saying that Peter Dutton has claimed that the annual waste generated by a small modular nuclear reactor will amount to the size of a Coke can. There are experts saying that's absolute rubbish. I see yesterday at a Liberal conference, he told the gathering, he said that his plan will cost a fraction of the Labor Party renewable policy. But no one is sort of believing, I suppose, either side. The question has been asked, well, how much is this renewables costing? How much does it cost to move these wind turbines from 10 kilometres off the Illawarra coastline to 20 kilometres off the coastline? And we're just getting no answers from politicians at all, Mark.
Well, that's true. We certainly haven't had many costings about the renewable transition that they talk about, because it's, effectively tens of billions of dollars in new transmission wires, backup power schemes like Snowy 2.0, which is a complete disaster, community batteries, gas peaking plants, subsidies from government to wind and solar farms. I mean, all of those costs to the taxpayer are enormous, and no one's ever tallied them up in any accurate way, and no politician advocating renewables ever wants to talk about it, because it's incredibly expensive, and there's an argument that it's a waste of money given that Australia's carbon emissions can never influence the global climate. So Peter Dutton at least has got out with some detail. He's identified the locations of where he'll put these nuclear power plants. In New South Wales, it's Lithgow, where you'd have the retirement of Mount Piper coal-fired power eventually, and Liddell near Muswellbrook in the Hunter Valley, where the Liddell facility has already closed down. So, you know, that's what we've been talking about, that you put them where coal-fired power stations were closing down. But, Brent, the debate is surreal. I would have thought the whole debate about nuclear in Australia ended when the Albanese government, supported by the coalition, said we're going to have nuclear submarines. So if you can have a nuclear reactor sitting in a submarine in the middle of Sydney Harbour, why wouldn't you have nuclear power stations generating electricity, provide a bit of competition in that market, valuable 24/7 baseload power that's much needed to back up the renewables? I'm amazed that the left wing of politics hasn't embraced this to say, well, look, we conceded this on submarines, we're going to need a workforce and waste disposal and all that for the submarines. Well, we'll do it for nuclear power. And from their point of view, if they really think, you know, Australia can save the planet, to back up the renewables with baseload power is the most effective way of keeping the lights on. So it's a, you know, I've seen some commentators say that the debate, the way it's been framed, and in particular the Labor Party scare campaign, just shows a low-grade level of political discourse in Australia, and I think that's very true.
The memes that have come out from the Labor side of politics, I can only think of one word, and it's just immature.
Yeah, juvenile, three-eyed koalas, and making out that a nuclear facility would mutate our native wildlife. Well, what about the nuclear submarines? I mean, Albanese is supporting the purchase of nuclear submarines that will sit in the major harbours of the nation, Port Melbourne, Sydney Harbour, up there in Brisbane. They'll go out on manoeuvres and possibly see active service, and then come back and they rest underwater close to millions of Australians in the major population centres. So Where's the mutation in that? What does that do to koalas and everyone else? The fact we've got nuclear reactors sitting inside our submarines as part of the defence of Australia. So, you know, at that point, I would have thought the debate ended, and any sensible person would say, you look around the world, countries that have got nuclear submarines, big ones like the United States, Russia, India, China, France and Britain, have also got nuclear power because the two go together. You need a sophisticated workforce. We've got to build that up in Australia first for the submarines and then Dutton's power stations if they ever materialise. And your waste disposal issues are pretty well the same, you know. Whether they're submarines or generating electricity, there's a waste issue there. And the obvious answer is Australia has massive areas of isolated desert in the middle of our continent, and that's where you'd put the waste.
Is Dutton putting the horse before the car? Because the way Australia is at the moment, we talk about New South Wales, we talk federally, I mean, you can't do anything with nuclear power unless the legislation has changed.
Yeah, there is a ban. He'd have to get this through the Senate. There's a 25-year-old, rather obscure way in which a nuclear electricity generation ban was placed in a federal statute. So he's going to have to get it through the Senate to make it legal. But that's a challenge for future parliaments, and he'd obviously be arguing a mandate to do that from the people of Australia if he was ever elected. So, yeah, it's a long way off. It's depends on an election victory. It depends on legislation passing the parliament. It depends on funding. It depends on the time lag to build these facilities, by which time, my view is that the renewables transition would have already imploded on us. It's going to be too late. You know, this nuclear power push really should have started 20 years ago when they started to talk about climate change. It was always the logical response to have baseload power and have carbon-free generation to satisfy both sides of the debate. But we missed that opportunity. These nuclear facilities will come at a time when I think we'll find we just haven't got the backup power to keep the lights on. But when the sun's not shining, the wind's not blowing, we're not going to have pumped hydro on the flattest, driest continent on Earth. The government's not building enough or subsidising gas peaking plants, and we're going to rely essentially on batteries, community batteries and maybe batteries in your backyard. If you've got some solar on the roof, well, you know, batteries can last 2 to 4 hours. They won't get you through a full night, so all you can say to Australia is good luck.
Do you think the next election is going to be obviously a federal election, but also a referendum on nuclear energy?
Well, Albanese is saying that. He wants to make it that way with a scare campaign. I don't know how many people are going to be scared in marginal seats because Dutton in New South Wales wants a nuclear facility at Lithgow and one at Liddell, while Albanese is putting nuclear submarines in the middle of Sydney Harbour. You know, like, I mean, if you're scared of Liddell and Lithgow, you must be absolutely petrified of you know, a nuclear submarine in the middle of our major city, Sydney. So I think Albanese will go down that path. There's obviously a policy difference that's opened up, but it's so absurd to be laughable.
By not putting costings out there, though, what Dutton has opened himself up to is, you know, all sorts of different stories and reports coming out as to, you know, we've got today in my 10 o'clock bulletin this morning, we led with a story about experts have come out and said how many billions of dollars Peter Dutton's plan is going to cost as opposed to how many billions of dollars, you know, the Labor Party renewables plan is going to cost. We've got costs being thrown left, right and centre. Who knows whether they're fact or whether they're fiction? But by Peter Dutton not putting some form of costings on the table, has that created more problems for him than it's worth?
Well, it's opened up a scare campaign on the cost front, there's no doubt about that, but it's also true that the opposition would develop a full budget plan and release it in the election campaign. That's how it's normally done. You go to the election and you get your costings checked by independent sources in Canberra and you release them in the election and people can see, you know, what sort of deficit or surplus you'll have in total. So I don't know how much Dutton would want to spend in his first term in government in the first 3 years on these nuclear facilities. But Brent, I can guarantee you one thing. Nothing we ever build in this energy fiasco will ever be as expensive as Snowy 2.0, nor as disastrous. I mean, Malcolm Turnbull said he paid $15 billion for it. The cost has blown out in the construction to another 15. It's a $30 billion project, effectively, where the drilling machine, Florence, is either stuck in hard rock or bogged down in slush. And they're not making any progress, and it looks like they may never complete it. That we're going to spend $30 billion on a project that was never completed. So, you know, the nuclear power plants won't be cheap, but they can be built, they will be built, they're in other countries, we know that, and ultimately, if Dutton has enough time in government, he'll get the job done.
The offshore wind farm proposed for the New South Wales South Coast, it looks like it's divided, they say, the tight-knit Illawarra community, with 50% of locals opposed to the project, while the other half either support it, don't care, or will support the proposal if the local environment is protected. So more than 50% of locals in the Illawarra, according to this survey, are just dead set against this New South Wales Illawarra offshore wind farm, Mark.
Yeah, well, that's not surprising, because Australians got used to the idea of a pristine coastline, and environmentalists once supported that idea, that in terms of the view, the seascape, the protection of marine environment, the quality of our beaches, we've never wanted stuff out in the middle of the ocean that degrades any of that. You know, the Greens used to say save the whale, but this Illawarra zone is in the middle of the whale migration zone. It's sort of killed the whale now to save the planet, supposedly, and that's ridiculous. I asked Penny Sharp, the Environment Minister in New South Wales this week, also the Energy Minister, has the New South Wales government received any proposals of investment to build an offshore wind farm in the Illawarra? And she said over the last 2 years, no, they hadn't. No proposals for investment, and she said because it's out there so far off the shore, 20 kilometres, it's in Commonwealth waters, so it's the full responsibility of Chris Bowen, and it doesn't sound like the New South Wales government will have anything to do with it. And the truth is, Brent, Chris Bowen can declare a zone out there eligible for these wind farms, but it doesn't mean an investor will actually put the money up to build them. Because they've got to be a lot cheaper to do inland, where obviously, you know, there's plenty of them, and they're exploding across the landscape in the western districts of New South Wales, where you get the strong wind. And these things are so much more expensive. You know, they're talking about building 300 wind towers. They're so much taller, the height of Centrepoint Tower in Sydney. So these things are enormous. They're 20 kilometres out there. You've got to wire them into the grid, which is very expensive. Apparently in storms overseas, they can fall over. You've got big maintenance costs. I doubt there'll ever be an investor who fulfils the Bowen plan.
I've read a couple of people that have said the same thing, Mark. They doubt there will ever be an investor that will front up and basically fulfil the plan. Gee, you never know. I mean, I suppose...
They haven't jumped out of the...
No, they haven't, have
week,
they?
Have they?
No.
I haven't seen Twiggy Forrest or some other very rich person, Cannon Brooks or Holmes Accord or any of these renewable advocates, Malcolm Turnbull. I haven't seen anyone put their hand up yet to do this, because they normally focus on projects further west in New South Wales on dry land.
The other thing that's never talked about, Mark, is the enormous amount of money that the federal governments are paying out for subsidies for renewable projects. I mean, it's billions and billions of dollars. Take that away, and renewables look more expensive, really, don't they?
Oh, you've got to put in the full cost of government subsidies, the transmission wires and the backup power for when the renewables aren't generating electricity. So there's three extra costs you've always got to build in, and of course the renewable advocates never say that. The government costs are huge. Just this week, not much publicity about it, the New South Wales government established a new $1 billion slush fund for community batteries to back up the renewables. And the Labor Party's made a big song and dance. They're against electricity privatisation. The money's been taken from the electricity privatisation funds of the former government. $1 billion for community batteries, effectively, which have got limited use, but you know, they're desperate to get some sort of storage in the system for when these renewables aren't functioning.
Look, people find it difficult to get all hot and fuzzy under the collar about budgets, but the New South Wales budget was released this week. Your thoughts on it?
Well, it didn't do much by cost saving. There was $3 billion worth of expenditure in the first year. This financial year and the next, $11 billion in deficit, which adds to inflationary pressures and demand, and it's a break on interest rate cuts. So if you're trying to do something about the cost of living crisis, deficit budgeting doesn't work. But Labor made some inroads. They made $6 billion of savings 9 months ago. In this budget, there's basically nothing by way of cost savings in the $120 billion state outlays. So they've given up on looking for efficiencies in government, and it's just spend, spend, spend. Their only revenue measure was increase in land tax. So, you know, Daniel Mucki, I thought it was a very lazy old Labor-style budget where he's spending more. He's permanently in deficit now. We know one thing, Brent. As long as Labor's in government in New South Wales, the budget will be in deficit and will be accumulating debt because they gave up on cost savings, which I found very surprising after the promising start they made last year.
I've got an email here. We talked about this morning, a massive gas shortage in New South Wales, which could send electricity bills higher, has partly been caused by a lack of wind and solar energy going into the grid. Now, that's according to the energy market operator, Australian energy market operator, AEMO. So, Mark, question, let me just go to it. Matthew says, could I ask Mark Latham if it is possible in New South Wales to override native title for the benefit of all? It is out of towners that are holding up the Narrabri gas project going forward. They've jumped through hoops for years to be stopped by these idiots because, as part of this story, they say that the Santos Narrabri gas project, which it won't be pumping gas by 2026 as originally planned due to delays around native title land access and slow planning approvals.
Yeah, it's been torturous for Santos to get that development up and running, and they've currently got a native title appeal in the courts. You know, there's been about 30 hoops that they've had to jump through, and they've still got more to do. So it's a debacle, Brett, to think that New South Wales and Victoria is just as bad. We've got no gas supply that we create ourselves. It's all imported, and we're running out, and they're saying in Victoria they won't have enough gas to provide households and keep elderly people warm during this winter. So, you know, it's incredible, but it's a sign of how crazy the energy policy is, that because gas is a fossil fuel, Labor governments have been against it with the support of the Greens, and we're going to get to the point where people will be freezing, particularly in Victoria, because we've just run out of the product.
So is it possible to override a native title or not?
I wouldn't have thought so. There's native title legislation that's been upheld by the High Court, so that's very difficult. But the reality is the New South Wales government 5 years ago should have passed special legislation to get Santos approved and up and running, and then allow people to challenge it and get those court appeals out of the way very quickly. The problem is it's not just the native title. The whole thing has been through the most torturous, slow, it's like watching grass grow, slow-moving process you could ever possibly imagine. And Santos have been at this for 8 years, Brent. Mm. 8 years. And after a couple of years, the New South Wales government should have said, well, this is an essential project. We'll pass it under our state's significant development. We'll get it done quickly. We'll do special legislation. And anyone who wants to challenge it can do that over the next 12 months. And it would have all been done and dusted by now, one way or another. It's a sign of how you treat these companies badly. It's a wonder they try to invest at all. So Santos is still a fair way off, and we've basically got no the local gas supply in New South Wales, and Victoria is just as bad.
Earlier this week, I suppose Anthony Albanese was on the back foot, that's for sure. He wasn't using the right language to defend what happened in reference to this press conference with the staff from the Chinese embassy blocking or trying to block journalist and former detainee Cheng Li. What did he say? They got together and the best they could come up with was ham-fisted and clumsy. He missed the opportunity. 8 hours later, after demands from the coalition to grow a backbone, they toughened the language. But it was a missed opportunity, wasn't it, Mark, for Anthony Albanese to say, listen, we're not going to be bullied by places like China.
Yeah, you should have said that outright and given them a dressing down, told them to pull in their heads in the Australian vernacular. And we had the Chinese Premier Li visiting, and yeah, we've discussed this several times, Chinese foolishness and interference in Australian politics. They thought it was clever to have a couple of goons shield this journalist, block this journalist from any TV coverage that she was there, because she had been detained for bogus security reasons in China up until last year. So that's not how you do things in Australia. You can't have press conferences with the Australian Prime Minister there where Chinese officials are standing in deliberately standing in a place to shield a journalist from TV cameras. And then I read where she was banned by the Chinese from going to a different function in Canberra. Well, Albanese should have said, this is not how we do things in Australia. You're a guest in our country. We're a democracy. We'll try to promote a free press. So get your goons out of the way and pull your head in.
Sadly, he didn't say that. I mean, Australians just simply don't want their leaders going soft on bad behaviour, do they?
Well, how many times is it going to happen? I mean, we had, back in the day, the Labor Party with the Sam Dastyari scandals, Chinese spies with donations trying to manipulate the Australian political system. And Malcolm Turnbull, to his credit, passed foreign interference legislation. That's how bad it was to make these things illegal. Well, when will the Chinese ever learn? This is all counterproductive. When they do this in Australia, it was the attempted intimidation of MPs in the New South Wales Parliament, or this incident with Cheng Li. The Chinese have got the dumbest diplomats on the planet, because they don't seem to understand through their thick skulls. It's totally counterproductive. They lose friends whenever they do this. It's obvious. It's exposed in our media. Everyone's hostile to it. And if they're worried about Taiwan, all they're doing is pushing more and more people into Taiwan's camp. So China, counterproductive and just plain dumb.
State of Origin, just before we let you go, State of Origin, it's the second match. It's in Melbourne. If New South Wales don't win, as they say, Mark, it's all over Red Rover.
Yeah, they lose the series 2-0. They're favourites in the market. That's the thing that amazes me in the betting market. New South Wales lost the first game pretty comprehensively. They've had to make changes to their team. Queensland has continuity and stability in their lineup, but somehow New South Wales ends up as the favourite for the match. So for those who have a bet on the footy, we go for Queensland and make money game after game, and I'm not expecting anything different in Melbourne on Wednesday.
We'll hold our breath, or shall we not? We'll wait and see what happens.
New South Wales, but geez, it's hard going. I just think they've got a better team. But what happens in the bookmakers, the betting markets, I find amazing that New South Wales, time after time, can be the favourites. I don't know how that happens, but anyway, for those who are back on Queensland, it's easy money, Brent.
All right, Mark. Have a good Wednesday night watching the footy. Have a good week, and we'll look forward to talking with you next Sunday.
You too. A pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Bye-bye. That's Mark Latham.